Few things are for sure in this life, but this is. If we live for any substantial amount of time, we will encounter grief due to the loss of a loved one. Not something any of us ever want, and we all handle it differently. This podcast is to feature those who have done purposeful and meaningful things through their grief. These people featured on here are normal folks, just like you and me, who were thrust into a place they never wanted to be in their lives. A painful place. As they move through their pain, they realize that something worthwhile, something for the greater good, could come out of the unthinkable. I'm sure that none of them would ever consider themselves to be a hero, but when I searched the definition of the word hero, I found this. A person who is admired or idolized for courage, outstanding achievements, or noble qualities. And that fit. And so, it's my privilege to bring you the remarkable stories of these heroes in grief. Hi, everyone. This is Tom, your host for the Heroes in Grief podcast. And the response has been incredible so far, and I want to thank you for that. It's getting out to people, and they're letting us know that it's helping them. And that is what it's all about. I want to make you aware of a way that you can support this podcast without having to spend 1 cent. And that is through affiliate marketing. I've set up affiliate marketing for online shopping. If you do online shopping, then I have links to all the major retailers, most of them anyways, and I can provide them for you so that when you buy online through those links, you'll help support the podcast through the percentages that we get. It doesn't cost you anything more. You just shop like you regularly would on the sites that you love. It's very easy. All you have to do is shop. And that's it. Just let me know the links to the places that you want to shop at, and I will provide the affiliate links so that you can do it. If you want more information on this, you can go to heroesandgrief.com. It takes you to the Linktree page where a video explains it in a little more detail. But you can always email me at tom@heroesandgrief.com, and I can answer questions for you. But you can support the podcast that way. And it's very easy, very simple, and it doesn't cost you a cent. Isn't that great? Thank you. Now here's today's episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Heroes in Grief podcast, and it's good to have you with us again today. Today, we have Rachel Tenpenny McGonigal. She is a holistic person to help you with your grief and your well-being in many ways, and a lot with your diet, too. So that's going to be really exciting. I just want to let you know about a few things before we get started, and that is that we now have a shop on my site for the podcast. And so if you go to heroesandgrief.com, it takes you to where all the links are. That's on a Linktree site. And the shop is right on there. There's a tab for that. What the shop has is it has resources from the shows that you have listened to. So you can get them right there. If you are interested in helping out in other ways, then you can always be part of the affiliate marketing that we do. All major brands, if you shop online, just let me know and I can help you with that. All right. So very quick and painless with that. So we'd like to get into things right away. And Rachel, welcome. Where are you located?
Thank you for having me. I live in Northern Virginia, so about half an hour outside of Washington, D.C.
Beautiful, beautiful. I have been to Washington once when I was very young and through Virginia many times. So, but it's a beautiful area of the country, that's for sure. So we like to find out about your grief story. So that's the first part. So if you wouldn't mind sharing that with us and the details of that.
Well, I have a few grief stories, but the main one that launched me into this grief arena is my baby daughters died almost 16 years ago. So their birthday would be June 24th. So we're in their birth month. And Ellie died when she was 7 days old and Aubrey died when she was 13 days old. And it was one of those moments in my life. I was blindsided. We didn't see it coming. We didn't know anything was wrong. We did everything that we could. It simply wasn't enough. My older daughter, Aubrey, we actually decided to remove her from life support after meeting with a bunch of specialists after about 5 days of some really serious secondary issues that seemed to occur when her sister died. So it was, you know, it was just one of, I had a 2.5-year-old son at the time as well. So it felt like too much.
I'm so sorry. So sorry.
Way too much. And I went from planning my baby shower to walking around a cemetery with a map to pick the plot of which my daughters would be buried in. And I remember on the day of the funeral, getting my little guy, who is 2.5, buttoning up his little blue and white collared shirt to attend his sister's funeral. And I cut all my hair off, which we can talk about that later, about weird things we do when we're grieving. But one of my instincts was just to cut all my hair off. And I think for me, looking back, what I've realized is I had a really hard time with the internal nature of grief. And I really wanted some kind of external representation that my whole world had changed and I wasn't the same. And cutting off my hair seemed to be the most obvious way for me to do it. I had said I was going to have a t-shirt made that said, "My daughter's just died," and wear it everywhere. And my mom begged me not to, but, you know, and she was wise to do so. But at the time, that felt really needed. But after I got my little boy all dressed up, I remember looking at myself in the mirror and with my new terrible haircut that was awful and I hated it. And I was sad, and I couldn't believe this had happened to our family and happened to my girls. And I looked at myself straight in the mirror, and I said, "I know you wish that this did not happen to your children or to your family, but it did. And so what are you going to do next?" And that kind of set the tone for how my grief journey has gone, and a big part of why I stepped into helping other people get equipped for their own grief journey. Because that big question of what am I going to do next, right? How am I going to respond to this? How is this going to define me? How much of my identity is going to be centered and surrounded on this tragic loss became primary questions for me. I think they needed to be answered. I think we don't talk about them enough. And that's how I got started in holistic measures. That's how I got started building my programs. That's how my sister and I developed our line of emotional well-being teas. We have a line of organic herbal teas that actually support your emotional well-being. Because I was answering those questions and I thought, if I am, other people must be as well. And if they're not, maybe they should be. But let's give them as much support as possible while
we're dealing. How long was it when you looked in the mirror after things happened?
Yeah, so that mirror moment was only 10 days, 11 days after. I mean, it was the girl's funeral.
That is amazing, because you're so in that whirlwind at that point. And that is amazing to have such introspective, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. And let's also put some context around that. You know, I had that conversation with myself and I knew that that was part of the motivation of why I wanted to figure out a way through. But I didn't immediately jump into doing that. I pretty much curled up in bed and only really got out for my 2.5-year-old because he still needed a mom, right? He needed a bath and he needed lunch, breakfast, and dinner, and he needed, he could not be ignored, and I refused to ignore him. But that was pretty much the most I could expect of myself. That was taking all of my energy. And so a cup of tea and my 2.5-year-old son were pretty much the only two things that I put any energy or effort into for probably the first 3 months.
I think that that's an excellent point for people, is to realize that, to be aware that helping things can come to you in the midst of all of that, and that they may not blossom until later on. And so just to be aware of those kind of things, because you are so lost and you're really not in touch with kind of what's going on. So that's an excellent point, I think, for people to realize.
Well, in looking back, I'm not sure that I knew this as much in the moment, but looking back, I realized that I needed rest. I needed to hibernate for a while. Rest is an active healing activity. It's not a passive healing activity. And I think that gets very confusing in the grief community when we feel like, I just need to rest. I just need to pull back. I just need to say no to a lot of things, as if we're stopping or leaving or ending or hiding or what other words and labels are put on it. Because I was actively participating in my path forward, even by resting for a very long time. And I didn't clean. I barely did any laundry. People brought us meals for a while. We have a joke in our house. We don't have granola bars ever in our pantry anymore, because for those first 3 months, whenever my son was hungry, I just say, "Get a granola bar."
Simple and easy.
You know, it's, part of me is like, I have mommy guilt, right? Like, I can't believe I did that to my son. But the other part of me knows that if that was the worst of it, right? If that was the biggest inconvenience, that for a couple of months, we defaulted to granola bars, we did the best we could.
Much better than McDonald's, right?
Sure. And we had other food, but right. But it was just, I just say, you know, because he was just old enough to do a couple things on his own, but still young enough to need his mom a lot. So those little things like go play with your trains, get your own granola bar, right? They became those default survival modes for me when I just was having a really hard time. And I wasn't always having as hard of a time, but it was a pretty hard time for those first give or take 90 days. I'm not trying to put a hard line on it. There is no, you know, it's not like I counted, but those first 3 months were a blur. The first 18 months were significant. I didn't really feel that I turned a corner for about 18 months. And then at 3.5 years, I remember turning another big corner going, okay, I think I've gotten through the worst of it. I think I'm going to be okay now, and kept moving. And it wasn't that I magically became okay. I could see the fruits of my labor paying off. I could tell that I was responding differently to my life and my environment. My internal world was shifting. And from pretty much 18 months to about 3.5 years, I really just had to trust the process, even though sometimes I thought, I don't even know if this is helping. I just kept trusting the process. And in about 3.5 years, I realized, okay, this is really helping. And it wasn't that I didn't feel benefits or iterations along the way, but I still had those moments of doubt going, do you really ever get to the other side of this? And that is a controversial topic in the grief space, which I have been very vocal about saying that the pain of grief is absolutely not permanent if you don't want it to be. I stand by that 100%. It has been my own personal experience. Hundreds and hundreds of my clients have experienced the same thing. Pain does not have to be permanent after loss. A lot of people don't like to hear that, though. So when I talk about things like the iterations, the small progress, the pain lessening, feeling differently about your loss, feeling differently inside, having a different internal climate, sometimes that can be frustrating for people. I get a lot of pushback.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of feedback on my Instagram because I say things like that.
Yeah, the grief and pain are not the same as the love. And so people equate them sometimes. And so then they feel like they're losing the love or they're losing the person if they let that grief, that pain go. And that's not the case. You're never going to lose the love. You will never lose that part of it. So it's good to separate it. I believe in that wholeheartedly as well. I think another great point that you were talking about is taking care of your son. Many times the other children get lost when something happens like this, and it's focused more on the loss than on the ones that are still there. So that's important for people to remember. And also that grief does not have a timetable, to remember that, because some people think the stages go in order and all that kind of stuff, and that's not true. It's there's a long time where you may be in that serious grief point, and there's nothing wrong with you if there is. Everybody has their own journey. So let that go and let it be, because everyone's is different.
Well, and I always tell my clients two things. I say, grief is always harder than you want it to be, and it always lasts longer than you want it to. But our relationship with that that grief path is directly proportionate to the action steps we choose to take or choose not to take. And so it is incredibly important to remind grievers, and this is a big aspect of my program, that they do have a say. They do play a role in how that grief impacts them, controls their life, and changes them. And so this passive approach of just going, well, we all have a different path. Well, it's different for everyone. Well, it is, but that is too vague and too generic, right? It also has more to do with the way you choose to respond to it than it does that fact that everybody's grief journey is different. All of our journeys are different, period, whether it involves grief, marriage, parenting, careers, you name it. Okay, so that goes without saying. It's going to be different because we are all different. We had different relationship to our loss. We have different backgrounds. We have different personalities, different support systems. It's going to be different. But that doesn't actually explain anything. Yes. We need to know, well, what do we have in common so that we can follow and guide each other in ways that are beneficial? Because this idea that we have to reinvent the wheel every time somebody goes through a loss, which isn't an if, it's a when. Loss is inevitable. Any human being who lives long enough is highly likely. There's a rare, rare exception of anyone who gets through life without experiencing significant loss. So this idea that grief skills are life skills is very important to me, because there is no I get out of this or get out of jail free card here. We're all going to, whether it's a secondary loss, a primary loss, multiple losses, a death, an illness, like loss comes in many forms. So the more that we can actually look and see what we have in common and what helps, what benefits, what builds us back up, that's where our time and energy is better spent, not defending our journey saying, well, mine is different from yours. Well, thank you for pointing out the obvious. Of course it is. But what are you going to do about it? What do you want? And some people, they don't want a path through. And that's okay. This is a free country. You can pick whatever you want. But I did want a path through. And I wanted that path to be effective. I wanted it to be significant. And I was determined to make sure that I got the final say in how Aubrey and Ellie's life and death affected my life. I was not going to let my grief lead me. I was going to lead my grief.
Excellent and so well put. So the grief being, you know, different for everybody, that's universal, but your healing is individual. And so I think that's what you're getting to there, is that there is a way for you to heal and your individual path in that. And you give some tools to that. So that's a good segue into what you do. You have a website, that's thegriefgal.com. And of course, as usual, everything will be in the show notes. We'll have the links for you there and everything. And so there's a lot there. So we better get to it, because I don't know if we'll get through everything. You have the best course of action to talk about all of that. So why don't you share what you want about that, and we'll just go through all those things.
Yeah, well, the basic premise is, if you go to my website, you're going to discover that I offer, really two distinct programs that help you process your pain. The first is helping people discover their why, because there isn't a lot of reason to learn the how until we have a why. We need to know what bigger reason we have to get out of bed every morning to do this challenging work. It's not that it's always hard every minute, but there is uncomfortable, difficult, confusing aspects to putting the pieces of our lives back together after loss. And if you don't have a bigger reason for doing that, it's easy to get discouraged, to get depleted and run down, which makes it even easier to come to the conclusion that grief is forever. It's a life sentence. We can't do anything about it, right? And that's that slippery slope that I want to help people avoid. And then the second program that I offer is, once you've established that why, now we work on the logistics, the how, the actual tangible processes and steps that you can take to support your physical health, because grief takes an enormous toll on our bodies, our brains, our organs, our systems, our stress response, everything. And we need a plan for how to rebuild our bodies back up from the toll of grief. We also look at how to restore our relationships. Grief changes our relationships significantly. It exposes all kinds of things that either maybe we didn't see, we didn't know was there to see, or we did see it, but we had the capacity to ignore it until now, because grief completely strips us of our bandwidth, right? We're just not firing on all cylinders. So we no longer have the patience and capacity for things we might have previously had patience or capacity for. And how to communicate, how to reevaluate, how to decide who you want to show up in a relationship and the type of people you want in relationship with you is an incredibly important aspect of getting to the other side of your pain. And then the other part of it is, I help you unravel any of the things that might be tripping you up or holding you back, because our belief systems, our past, our personality, other unresolved wounds that we haven't actually addressed because, again, our capacity was maybe a little bit greater and now suddenly it's all being revealed in our pain. We want to work through all of those things, because it isn't enough just to know what to do. For example, if I help you put together a self-care plan, that can be hugely beneficial. And the self-care plan that I help you develop is specific just to you. We look at your personality, we look at your daily habits, we look at everything so that you have the best chance of integrating something in your life that you can do forever. But if inherently you believe that self-care is selfish, until we unravel why you believe that and replace it with a new belief that says self-care is not selfish, it doesn't matter how good your self-care plan is. You're not going to do it because you fundamentally disagree with it on some subconscious level, right? Those are the three aspects of my program that we address, because we have to get through all those layers, our physical health, our relational health, and then our own personal health, so that any of those logistical things actually stick, or else they're just words and they never become experience.
I love it, because the way I am, for anything is when I'm searching for something, I want the shortcut. I want to have it said to me how I need to do it. You know, so many things on the web these days, everything else, you'll see, you know, they'll give you a general sense of something. You see me watch a YouTube video and it just doesn't tell you exactly what you need to do. And it sounds like you're laying down those steps and, you know, someone out there is just screaming for help and they need to know, you know, how do I do this? There's so many general things that this sounds so exciting.
Oh, we get really specific. I don't mess around when it comes to that. You know, grief is a sacred space. Grievers come to you in a very vulnerable place. So we don't have the time or the energy to be vague and generic going, well, you know, figure out what works for you. How do you feel about it? Like, all I know is I'm sad, angry, right? Devastated, exhausted. I need you to help me take the first step. And that's what I do. That is, I teach them exactly what to do. The whole goal is complete clarity. Because if anything makes the world foggy, who we are, what we believe about ourselves, what we want from our future, our relationships get completely fogged up when we're overwhelmed with the pain of loss. So if we don't have someone to offer us tangible clarity, not vague ideas about what might possibly be helpful in a single situation, but actual tangible action steps you can start today that will help change the way that you feel, then you can take the next step after that and then the next step. And now, before you know it, you look back, you go, oh my gosh, I've been doing this for a year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. I'm doing it. I'm making it. I'm getting to the other side.
Don't you wish our counseling community would grab something like this? Because how many times have you heard, I went to a therapist, I did this, or I went to a counselor and they didn't address what I needed them to.
Yeah, 99% of my clients are those people, right? Like, I'm done just talking about it. Maybe it helped a little, like I needed someone to listen to me, but now I actually need next steps and I need those next steps to be specific.
Yeah. If people don't know out there, people who go through school, it's not required for them to have the grief courses most times. It's an elective for them. So the people you're going to may not even have experience in this area. So keep that in mind. And it is a much better approach to take with what you're talking about. I wish the whole community would grab something like that and really say, you know, this is how we're going to help people. I think it's the same in schools and things too, how they're teaching our kids, that they could do it so much more effectively. So there's other things that you're offering. I did, you know, I mean, you do other things like recipes and stuff like that. So what else?
Yeah. Well, and those are all part of my program. You know, I provide lists on what to eat, what to avoid, what supplements to take to make sure you don't overexercise, what it looks like if you're using exercise to self-medicate, the appropriate exercises, how to protect your rest if you're having trouble sleeping, how to remedy that safely and holistically, how to set boundaries, how to say no when you need to, how to ask for help when you need to, right? So the recipe is just as important, believe it or not, right? A recipe that understands how to make mineral rich broth that's going to help lower your body's anxiety levels, because that's what's happening when we're running on high anxiety, we're burning through minerals, is just as important as learning the communication skills to reestablish your relationship. And people don't like to put them on the same level, like they're two separate things, but they're not, because both of them are necessary in order to keep making progress.
Yes, because your physiological well-being is affecting your mind. And so you're not going to process things properly if you don't have the right tools.
Well, and it can get confusing going, okay, is this a manifestation of the emotional stress I'm under, right? Is this my sadness or my grief, my pain, my frustration? Or is this my body's way of telling me something else is going on, right? So do we need a physiological solution to it or do we need an emotional solution? And that can be very difficult to discern when you're the grieving, depleted, overwhelmed person. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's standing outside of that, who has the experience, it's much easier for them to say, you know, let's just eat something and let's eat the right thing. And then let's make this assessment, right? Let's get some sleep before we do this.
People want to give you some soup. Soup's got too much salt in it. So your blood pressure is going to go up. And, you know, it's a simple example of that. I think that you give something that's more healthy and able to address it.
Well, even simple things like if you're living off coffee, exercise is a huge, if you are spend about 3 seconds in the grief community, you'll hear it 100 times. Exercise, it helps with your mood. Exercise, it releases endorphins. Exercise. People have devoted entire blogs, even entire careers, to how exercising has gotten them through their grief. And I happen to know some of these people personally, and they actually had to pause their brilliant exercise remedy and go invisible for 6 months and leave and go to Bali, right, to get away and just recover, because it turns out that you can't exercise your grief away. You have to be aware of what restorative activities are actually helping you and which ones are further stressing you out and overwhelming you.
Yeah, it's important to remember that you need to process your grief. So you could use any of those things as a deterrent to getting into the meat and potatoes of processing your grief too. Oh, a little pun there on the eating side. But
yes, your slow cooked organic bone in meat and potatoes.
I like it. Yes, so don't forget to process the grief and go through it, because that's the only way you're going to get out of it.
Yes, and you can't rush, but you also don't have to. What's the better wording? You know, there's so much rhetoric out there about how grief is forever. And here's the truth. I think that's semantics. I don't know if grief is forever. I haven't lived forever. But I do know that I miss my daughters every day. I wonder what life would be like without them. I still wish I had more time to get to know them, right? I have a lot of wondering, a lot of longing. And I think that's a very real part of grief. So for me to say like, oh, grief is not a part of my life anymore, I don't think that would be true. Grief is a part of my life, but the pain of grief is not a part of my life. And so to say grief is forever, grief isn't forever, I don't even know if that matters, because the actual issue we're assessing is, do I have to stay in this much pain forever? And my answer is, no, you don't.
Right.
Joy, peace, purpose, meaning can come back into your life if you want it to. It takes a participatory process. You have to be willing to be a participant in the process, but it ultimately is up to you. And I think that gets to be a little controversial when people say, no, it isn't. It's not up to me. Grief has taken over my life. Grief is now my identity. And I keep gently and compassionately pushing back at that, saying, you're actually making a choice, even if you don't realize that you're making a choice. And you can unmake that choice and make a new choice at any point. Now, you're allowed to make whatever choice you want. I'll never tell anybody what choice to make, but I just want them to realize they are making a choice, that grief has not come into their life and suddenly taken all of their power of choice away. Right? It does take some of our choices away. I didn't have a choice not to lose my girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? That wasn't up to me. But I did have a choice in deciding how much of my life, my future, my identity was going to be impacted by it and in what ways it would be. And that's where I took my power back and said, this is up to me. That wasn't up to me, but this is up to me. And I'm going to make sure that I'm aware of that and act accordingly.
Mm-hmm. How about your clients? Have you dealt with the younger generation? Because it seems like this would be something that would be challenging to them. It seems like today's, you know, where a lot of people are saying, well, I'm a victim of this. I'm a, you know, this is why I'm the way I am. And that's it. Like, just like you're saying, have you dealt with anyone in challenging that? And
oh, I definitely have. And it has nothing to do with being in this younger generation. I see it in all mm-hmm. generations. But I've also encountered the opposite. You know, I sort of have two kinds of clients that come to me, and one of them is the, I don't think I'm ever going to be okay, but I can't stay like this, right? I can't stay in this much pain. Like, if you can even help me get 5% relief, like that's all that I need, right? I'm just desperate. And then I get the other type of client who is so committed to saying, this will not beat me. I will not lay down, right? I must persevere, but I don't know how, right? I'm just at a loss. And we have to unravel a lot with both. I can see myself in both of those types of clients. But the number one thing that I see that interferes with the process of grieving is not awareness. It's not support. It's not what generation you come from. It's codependency. People that struggle with a lot of codependent behaviors have a really hard time with grief, because often their identity is external to them. So when their external world changes, they don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. where people who struggle less with codependency have a much stronger sense of an internal identity. And so even when their world falls apart on the outside, they don't necessarily fall apart in the same proportion on the inside. And so that's even when people say, you know, grief is about love. Of course, grief is about love. Love is a huge part of grief. But in my experience, grief has way more to do, especially the pain of grief has way more to do with your identity. And people who are more clear on who they are, the pain doesn't grip them to the level that people who their identity was wrapped into who or what they lost, mm-hmm. right? That's my whole reason for living. They were all I had. Without them, I don't even know who I am, right? Those are big questions that we need to get answered, because if they are your purpose, your meaning, your reason for living, and now they're gone, we either have to come up with a new purpose or you don't have anything. Mm-hmm. What's pulling you forward if your whole – and what breaks my heart the most is when I see that response in – for example, I was talking to a woman and she actually called and said, thank you for saying that to me, even though it wasn't easy to hear. Both of her parents had passed away very close to each other. And she said, I just don't see a reason to move on. And I said, but didn't you tell me that you have a husband and three children and a grandchild? And she said, well, yes, I did. And I said, and not that I'm trying to say that her reason for moving on is, again, external. I'm just saying we have to make sure that we're stepping back and taking a look at who we really are, what kind of relationships we have, how we show up and operate in the world, and not allow the pain to trick us into believing that without that person or those people or the situation or whatever it is, we can never be okay. Mm-hmm. Because pain lies to us, unfortunately.
Yeah. I want to just qualify. I probably spoke that wrong, that, you know, generalizing about society or whatever. So I just, you know, I fall into that too. But so, yes, this person who lost the parents, like you were saying, so some of their identity was placed in that, right? So that was, now they have nothing. Is that what you're saying?
That's what she was expressing, right? Like they really, and part of it was because she had such a wonderful relationship with her parents. So the pain was real, right? She was desperately missing them. They were these anchors in this family, all holidays, all, you know, she went to them for advice. You know, she had this really meaningful relationship with her parents. And I was able to explain to her that the pain that she feels and the way we're going to process this powerful relationship that is now gone. Okay, we have memories, but we don't have an active daily encounter. That is the stuff we can process, okay? But if you have tied that into believing that your life now has no more meaning, that's a different question we need to answer, right? And the two don't have to be like tied together. Mm-hmm. We can actually say, wow, I'm in a lot of pain and my parents meant the world to me and they had this very special role in my life. And I also have a purpose. I have other things driving me forward. I am more than just my parents' daughter.
A lot to think about for people, and it's good. very good.
I hope so. I think the most important thing too, though, is it's not just about listening to me. Hopefully I can get you to think about things maybe a little differently, ask yourself some new questions. Even if you feel really mad at me right now, believe it or not, that's even a good thing because it just means something resonated, something triggered, something landed. But more importantly, I hope that it's not about what I say, it's about how I live. You know, I was once a devastated young mom trying to figure out how to make life ever be okay again after losing both of her baby daughters in a very traumatic way.
How far down the line are you in that?
It's been almost 16 years.
Oh, really? I had no idea it was that long.
Yeah, my older son, who was 2.5 at the time, just graduated from high school.
Congratulations. That's great. Yeah.
So I have some experience under my belt. Let's put it that way. And you can look at my life and you can see somebody who once looked in the mirror and honestly thought, I don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm ever going to be okay again. Like, I am not equipped for this. I am not ready for this. This is not ever anything I thought would be part of my life. Hmm. And I didn't want it to be part of my life. I was really mad about it. wasn't supposed to be part of my life, right? I didn't even do anything. All I did is love my children, right?
Mm-hmm. What's your background in schooling or anything else?
Yeah, no, my background, I have a degree in political science. And I originally wanted to go into humanitarian work. But then when I met my husband, who's now my ex-husband, he was in the military. So I left myself behind to follow his career and raise our kids. So at the time, I was a stay-at-home mom. And I think I've always been a lifelong learner. I will admit, I'm a little feisty. I've got that. That's a natural personality. I don't like people to put me in a box and tell me what I can and can't do or how I will or won't be okay. Or whenever people said, you know, a mother who loses a child is never okay. There was a rebellious part of me that said, don't you tell me what I'm going to do or what I'm not going to do. Right. And I didn't really know how to be okay, but I was just like, but you're not going to tell me. Like, you're not going to decide for me. So I do have that in me. But mostly, I think what it came down to is I love people and I love my life. And I did not want Aubrey and Ellie's legacy to be their mother no longer loving people and loving life.
That's beautiful. I think the life experience in grief is, I've seen this from so many people now who have taken on purposeful things out of their grief. It becomes so effective because of what you've experienced and you can relate to all those things. So it takes on a different expertise that, you know, people may ask. I didn't ask that question out of, you know, prying in any way or trying to make it sound, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, yeah, it's not like I went to grief school or something, right? Or I went, I got, you know, I don't have a psychology degree, which in some ways I actually think has helped because I purely looked at it through my own experience and then what, you know, what was actually helpful to others. And I, you know, I do have a good life. I am happy. The sad mom who thought, I don't think I'm ever going to be okay again, wakes up every morning and loves her life. Yes, I miss my girls, but I do love my life. I do like that grief does not control me. I do love seeing my well-adjusted other children. I love pursuing my career. I love watching my clients make progress. I love putting dinner in the oven and eating it and while we laugh around the table. And our lives aren't perfect. We've got drama and, you know, we've got to discipline kids and we've got two drivers and, you know, things can get pretty stressful around here. Lots of laundry and kids are like, excuse me, why is it on the floor again? Right. But like basic remedial, like non-life altering issues, right? Like there was one point in my life, my children were dead, right? That changes your perspective tremendously. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, all of the other things don't seem so terrible, right? But that's still a choice. We have to choose to say, okay, I'm going to allow my perspective to be shifted this way instead of this way, because it doesn't happen automatically. Grief doesn't automatically resolve itself. We don't magically discover some deeper good or purpose. And let me just be clear. I do not believe that my girls had to die for some greater good to take place. They were not expendable so that me or you or anybody listening can say, oh, I've been enlightened, or oh, this has helped me or impacted me. Like, that would have never happened if Rachel didn't go through her most tragic loss. My daughters are valuable. They are more valuable than any of the good that has come out of this. But I didn't have a choice in whether I got to keep them or not. Mm-hmm. So when I lost them, I decided I did not want my pain to be in vain, and I was going to choose some good instead of no good, right? And I chose it. It wasn't created. It didn't reveal itself. It didn't magically happen, right? People have said that to me. Someday you'll realize why this had to happen. No, I won't, because it should have never happened. Mm. It's a tragic, horrible thing, but it wasn't up to me. I didn't get to decide about that, but I did get to decide about myself, and I chose a different path for myself. And I'm legitimately content. And I think that is, you know, unthinkable when you are in the depths of grief. And I think it's really important for someone who's ahead of you to be able to say, hey, it feels really hard right now, but this is not a permanent life sentence. I would have given anything when I was in my deep grief for someone to come along and say, hey, I'm ahead of you and I can show you the way.
Folks, right? Yes, folks, this is very much on my heart for the purpose of this podcast right here, what you just said. Hope for people. And there's so many elements in what you've talked about today that people can draw from. And you know, probably through your experience hearing other people and what they're talking about, whether it's their the exact experience, which none of us have, or not, that you gain things out of it. And you have given us a ton here today to do that with. And I love that. That's great. And your approach to it and everything, that's amazing. Another thing you talked about was how other losses just don't seem as impactful. And we've just experienced that. I'm a big dog person. We have always had dogs. And, you know, my son passed last year, and we're going through a family crisis with Judy's son right now. That's, you know, impacted us for sure. And you just see that these things are more important than everything else. So we lost two dogs in the last year, February and just about a week ago, a week and a half ago. And I would have been, to a point, you know, before my other losses, devastated by that. And it just is, you put things in perspective better when you experience such loss. And it's felt good, actually, to say, okay, well, that was a little out of range, I think, at the time. But that's another thing for folks to grab onto. You know, what other things, like when you have this platform, what do you like to say to people? Are there, you've said a lot about the kind of nuggets that I like to bring out for people that they don't think about, but they're experiencing. But what else? What have, you know, anything that you've learned or that you see as something that we should be addressing on a regular basis? You've mentioned a lot already, but anything like that?
So the first thing I tell everyone, especially my clients, is give yourself a lot of grace. Okay, the process of grief really requires a lot of self-compassion. And I think sometimes people think that's lost on me because I'm such a cheerleader for this idea of choice and empowerment in our pain, that I'm just like, let's do this, right? Everybody, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Let's go. I don't actually believe that at all. That is not my approach. What I actually believe in is first letting people know, I see you, I hear you, right? And I'm here to support you. We're going to figure this out.
The heart is in there.
Yes. And we're patient and we're kind, and there's so much space to be yourself, right? This is safe, sacred space for sure. It's just safe, sacred space with a plan. That's all.
I would not worry about that at all, Rachel. I think you're very approachable and relatable, and you come across as empathetic and in all those ways. So I would never see that in you.
Yeah, well, I would never like anybody to tell me that in my grief. I'd be like, get out of here, go away, you know. But once we establish that, because trust is really important, you got to believe that someone's in your corner, right? Essentially, what I do is like I climb right down in the pit with you. And I think all of us as grievers, when we encounter other grievers, that's when the best gifts we can give each other is just to say, I'm in it when it's messy, I'm in it when it's easy, like I'm just in it, right? We're going to do this together. And then the second thing I tell them is, let's figure out what your body needs and get your physical support ASAP. Like that is the 100% first step that we do.
You're a grief friend, you know, you come alongside and help them in something that they're not familiar with.
Right. But I'm a friend with some experience and some wisdom under my belt who also knows when to say, you know, that's not actually going to work.
Yeah. That's not right, a good
we're gonna,
thing.
We're going to have to pivot. Yeah, that's not actually beneficial or helpful to you. So it's your choice, but you're going to hear me push back a little bit on that because I don't believe that it is a beneficial choice, right? And that's why, you know, in grief, we do need friends, but we also need guides. And I'm a friendly guide.
And honesty. Right?
Because the guide, yes, a guide can nudge us. It's, you know, it's like a, you know, I grew up playing sports, and when I played basketball, you know, you had your teammates who we were, you know, working it out together, practicing hard, playing, going through it all together. And sometimes we get on each other, other times we encourage each other. And then we had coaches, and our coaches were the ones that said, that was the wrong move, or your footwork is wrong, or that was a good play, or good instincts, because they're the coach. They're not the player. And in grief, yeah, we need some players, but we also need some coaches because they have a perspective that players don't.
Wonderful. Rachel, thank you so much. This has been exciting, exhilarating for me. You are the type of person that I relate to. On a, you know, I'm a up in your face, honest person, and I like to think that I have a heart. So I try to incorporate all those things. What about any, you may have already had them, but what about any final thoughts or words for our folks out there?
I mean, truthfully, please don't underestimate the toll grief is taking on your body. Not everything that you are feeling and struggling with in your pain is about your loss. Some of it is purely about your body being so depleted it can't work properly. I cannot emphasize that enough. It does not get talked about in the grief community enough. Yes, there is more to just getting your body in a healthier place. It, in and of itself, it is not going to be some magic cure for you, but it is vital and it is missing. And there is not enough willpower in the world to try to put the pieces of your heart back together again if your body is in shambles. We have to fix that first. You'd be amazed at how differently you can face your grief if your body has the support that it needs.
Excellent. Thank you. That is great. Rachel Tenpenny McGonigal, and she is thegriefgal.com. She has an Instagram page. She has a Facebook page. And of course, we'll have the links to everything in the show notes, and you can find out all the other things she has on there. Like I said, there's lots of recipes and things like this that she touches on. She does almost daily little reels for people and to continue along the process. So Rachel, thank you so much. I'm glad you took the time to do this. Thank you for being a guest here.
No, thank you.
Absolutely.
It's always a privilege. No,
our privilege. Thank you. And we will get everything out for everybody. We will see you again out there. All right. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Heroes in Grief podcast. If you'd like access to any of the links that we discussed in today's show, you can find them in the show notes. There's also a link there to support the podcast if you care to. And there is an email link for me there. I'd love to hear from you and your ideas about the show or what you thought about the show. You really can help out this podcast to get to more people if you subscribe, rate, or review it in whichever way your platform provides. Each week, Heroes in Grief is released on Sunday, so look for new episodes there. Thank you again for listening to Heroes in Grief.